Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View here on Monday evening, May 23rd. This is your humble, irrepressible host, PK, speaking. Welcome back, everybody. I have an interesting host tonight. I've known this fellow for a few weeks. I want to say hi to a few friends if they're out there. My new friend, Charlene, whom I hope to interview in the very near future. She's a very sharp gal, very astute about a lot of things, and I think she's become one of my fans, so that's good. A lot of stuff happened in the news this week. Obama finally stood up to the Israeli lobby and to Netanyahu, although I think it's perhaps it's just a bit of a charade, but it wouldn't be a bad thing to go back to the 67 borders. Or as I prefer, the 1947 borders. I've said for a long time now, it's long overdue that Israel gets its allowance completely cut off and it gets taken to the woodshed, because that is something that's really in need of this mess in the Middle East, this hate-orama going on over there. So as you know, I am one to criticize Israel and Zionism, and its critics are growing, and, we're Teflon when they use the old anti-Semitic smear where they try to trot out the Holocaust. That just sounds like the little boy crying wolf anymore. It just really carries no weight when its critics have an objective, intellectual, scholarly way of doing things, which does not include hatred or advocating genocide or anybody losing their rights. So let the neocons Zionists wet their pants, because opposition to this terrorist apartheid state continues to grow. And I am one of its harshest critics, and I won't back away from that. Interestingly enough, I have my guest who should be on a little later, soon perhaps, is a young fellow I met a few weeks ago, and he is a math major. And we were talking about foreign policy a bit. We spoke of several things, including foreign policy. In fact, this fella is he has a mixed race background, and he has some views. I was shocked to hear his mixed race background is, I think, black and white parents. Black and white, not, say, Asian or white. I think it's black and white. And so this is something we'll discuss. And I think he's an Obama supporter. And he made a few statements about foreign policy that I was wanting to discuss with him and debate him on a little bit and see if I can maybe get him to refocus his viewpoint on a few things. But we'll see how that goes down. But it's interesting always to have new people on and new friends. And he was quite astute about a few things that we talked about. So I'm glad to be able to have him come on. I don't know if he'll be able to stay the whole time frame, but he'll stay as long as he can. And we'll see how the discussion goes. But he is, as I recall, anti-Zionist. So I'm glad about that. And we can explore that a little bit further when he comes on. So, and his name is Nick. Bright young fella. I mentioned he's an Obama supporter. I want to get into some of that. Have a few questions for him about that. We're going to we're going to touch on racism a bit, and I have a point of view on it that I think he'll get a kick out of, and it might startle him a little bit, but we'll see how that goes. And I forgot to thank our hosts again, bbsradio.com, for always promoting free speech. The fellas in the main office there, they're a bunch of good guys. They deserve the praise about spreading free speech, and thank goodness for alternative media and internet radio, because the the usual pro-Zionist corporate state media, all the major networks and major cable, including Fox and CNN, they pretty much sing the same song. So it's very important that we have this opportunity for alternative media, which is something I will always be thankful to the suits, as I call them, over at bbsradio.com. And they can take a joke. They're good guys. They can take a joke. They're funny. So I like being in this sort of family of fellow free spirits, free thinkers who treasure our First Amendment rights, unless Bush and Obama have taken those away too. I don't know. It's getting pretty scary out there. The American police state continues to grow. I didn't do it. I never voted for these clowns. I continue to speak well of and support Ron Paul. In fact, Ron Paul is actually the front runner. And it's funny how the media keeps ignoring him and, talking about they're still trying to find that good centrist candidate or, it's so laughable, and it's so obvious that they're trying to deliberately marginalize him and keep him out of the discussions. It's just so obvious, and I don't know why they discontinue this nonsense, but they do. So be that as it may, we're just going to keep hammering away. I think the next debate is in the first week of June. I don't know. I don't recall if it's the 4th or the 7th. But stay tuned for that, and I hope Ron Paul really tears it up next time. He made a little bit of a stir last time when he said, yes, heroin and cocaine should be legalized. I wish he would have said we should end this insane drug war. But actually, the correct term is re-legalized, because all these drugs used to be legal prior to the 1914 Harrison Act. And in fact, they were in painkillers. Cocaine was in different painkillers. It was in Coca-Cola and this and that, and opium was in different products. But you know what? Back then, thank goodness, those people had opiates and cocaine and methadone and even heroin to turn to for painkiller, because they didn't have a lot of what we have today. Put yourself in their shoes 100, 120 years ago. I mean, thank goodness they had these things to kill pain with. If any of you who have ever really needed it because of a surgery or any medical problems you've had, you would want it, that those products available to you. Of course, they've been misused over time, but drug prohibition, of course, creates harder drugs. So that is something that needs to be brought out in the debate. There's better ways of wording it. In fact, I've actually heard Dr. Paul debate it or state it more clearly in the past, but it was the first debate, and I'm sure he's trying to find his footing and get all that together. So as things move on, bring it on if they want to talk about drugs. I mean, I would say to them, well, is your drug war winning so far? Are we winning the war on drugs? Oh, they got some of the Mexican big shots last week. Between the Mexican army and the DEA, they caught some of the big ones. Gee, no one will take their place. Gee. It'll slow things down a little bit, but it'll pick up again. Oh, I forgot to mention that in case anybody would like to call in with comments or criticisms or to challenge the mighty PK here, our numbers are 530-413-4520 and 530-413-4511. So I hope that Nick is out there. Get ready to come on. I would hate to have to ad lib again tonight. I can do it, but it is difficult to ad lib for an hour if you're not super prepared, excuse me, for certain topics. But Back to this Middle East thing. Now Syria is erupting. Well, you know, that's all fine and well, but the U.S., again, should stay out of these problems. We don't need to be supplying either side. We don't need to be sending more weapons or foreign aid. We should just stay out and lead by example. Although the example of today, bankruptcy, bankrupting militarism, a dollar that's continuously losing its value, it's not really the way to lead by example that I would like to set. But, you know, it's a mess over there. And I like what Obama said. I don't know if he'll stick with it. It might be just a charade. It was funny to hear Netanyahu lecture him about the 67 borders. Well, you know what, Netanyahu and all the crazed Zionists, you know, you've reaped what you've sown. And I understand why the Palestinians are so upset and pissed off. I don't agree with the terrorism and all the violence, but a lot of them have been pushed to that point. When you've got, what, 70% unemployment and this whole Gaza Strip like one big concentration camp, you know, it's just so tragic. So those poor people, I hope that Egypt relaxes the borders. They said they were. And, you know, who knows what's happening in Egypt? I guess it's under military control now. I hope they'll have elections or, you know, nominate a new president. But I hope he's not under the thumb of the CIA, as is usually the case. So that remains to be seen. There's no reason for Egypt to threaten Israel. It has too many of its own problems already, a lot of poverty, probably food shortages because, as I understand it correctly, they're also quite dependent on grain aid from the U.S. And I don't even think that the Muslim Brotherhood is as threatening or as dangerous, you know, as it may have been in the past. Things change. People change. They can't afford a war. They don't have a military to conduct a huge military to conduct a war. They're not going to get the other Arab countries to go to war against Israel. They've got too many of their own problems. I don't think their people will go for that. It'd be just 100 steps backwards. They should work on trade, goodwill, dare I say, tourism. But Syria's got some serious problems. Now, you know, the old man Assad, the senior, he died a few years ago. Now the son is in power. And, you know, I thought he would have ruled more, I don't like the word democratically, but I thought he would have ruled more, you know, fairly and less heavy-handed. Because this heavy-handedness just comes back to haunt them. If he'd embarked on, as the three words I always like to say, liberty, property, and peace, Syria would be in much better shape. You know, it needs to develop its trade relations with its neighbors. It needs to probably stop intervening in Lebanon. I think Syria's kind of made that a puppet of itself. You know, it needs to focus on itself and trade, improving its economy, improving the rights of its people. You know, so this Arab Spring is still in bloom. But, you know, when you have a revolution, you never know what you're going to get afterwards. So that is a problem now, especially if they don't go down the right path. Because if they go down the right path, if they go down the path of more militarism or trying to pick a fight with Israel, which I really don't think they're going to do, but I mean, it's totally the wrong path to go down. As much as I'm anti-Zionist, I don't want to see more war. I don't need to see Israel threatened. I don't need to see it threaten its neighbors. And most of all, I don't need the U.S. drawn into more civil war or occupations or supposedly helping one side against the other, you know, sending more weapons in. I think each one of those missiles they've shot into Libya is like $1.5 million. So just the military-industrial complex, it just doesn't seem like it can get enough, and it fosters, and it would seem like it fosters and encourages civil wars throughout the world, especially if it's in oil-producing countries or mineral-rich countries. So I don't know where my guest Nick is yet. I gave him the numbers. I hope he'll be calling in. I was briefly talking about his bio. I'd call him, but I seem to misplace his number, and last time he didn't answer his calls anyway. So I hope that he will call in soon, because we had a good chat. But I was really surprised at some of his views that were rather imperialistic. So I'd like him to explain that if he ever calls in. Hopefully he will soon. I don't know what I did with his number. I called where he works, and he wasn't in today, and they didn't have his number either. So, but we were going to talk about also Greenspan. For some reason, he's a fan of Alan Greenspan. Now, for me, the Fed and Alan Greenspan are the main reason we're in the economic problems we have right now. He caused this whole recession, and Bernanke's making it worse. In fact, I heard a good description of Bernanke. Bin Laden, Ben Bernanke. Which makes sense, because he's done more destruction to the country than Osama did, except for the fact that Osama did further bankrupt this country, as he said he wanted to do, by drawing it into a foreign war on Muslim lands. And as I had mentioned last week, Osama, I was pretty much in agreement with the demands he made. I'm not trying to justify the guy, but, or what he's done. But his three main demands, I didn't have that much of a problem with. I'm shuffling through some notes here. Three of his main demands were, number one, he wanted all U.S. military personnel off of Saudi soil. Fine, I don't have a problem with that. And that sort of coincides with the Constitution. Second, he wanted the U.S. federal government to stop supporting and propping up Muslim dictators and tyrants. Got no problem with that. There's no constitutional authority to do that, to take American taxpayer money and prop up other governments' tyrants and dictators, nor is there any constitutional authority to station U.S. troops on Saudi Arabian soil or any other soil, foreign soil. And the third one, which I really agree with, is that he wanted the federal government, U.S. federal government, to stop supporting and propping up Israel. Well, that's within the confines of the Constitution also. There's no constitutional enumerations that the U.S. taxpayer is supposed to endlessly support Israel. It's not our 51st state. So these three things, ironically enough, that Osama bin Laden were some of his main, his three demands, I would agree with. Not because I'm some wimp who's anti-war. I'm not anti-war per se. I'm pro, very pro-gun rights, and I'm pro-defense. And a defense budget is different than a military budget, as Ron Paul would say. The military budget is huge. It's massive. It's $1 trillion foreign policy. It's over 700 U.S. military bases in over 140 foreign countries. That's a huge military budget. A defense budget would be much smaller, more streamlined. We would have plenty of weaponry and troops to defend our country. We still have our Navy and our submarines, but we wouldn't be stationing troops in all these foreign countries, which people don't want us there. I understand that. That's why they're pissed off, have been for years. A lot of Americans don't even know all these facts about how much is stationed overseas, you know, because they're too busy shopping or with their video games and sports. In fact, as I like to say, if Obama spent more time studying free market economics and less time watching ESPN, we'd probably be in better economic shape also. But as next year's election continues to shape up. Obama's, you know, he's ever the politician. I can see how he's grooming the masses to just love him and give him a second term. And mark my words, Obama's going to get a second term if Ron Paul is not nominated, which he probably won't be, because the rest of the Republicans and neocons, not the rest of the Republicans, but a lot of his opponents, Republican opponents, don't like him. You know, they call him the crazy when actually they're the crazies, because everything that Dr. Paul, pretty much everything Dr. Paul has written about, warned about, talked about for the last 30 years has come true. Once again, it's because of his knowledge of Austrian economics and sound money. Again, in Austrian economics, we can't tell you when exactly recessions and depressions are going to hit, but we can tell you how and why they're going to hit. Still no news from Nick. You know, I wondered if he was going to pull this. I hope he's got a phone. I sent him several emails. I heard from him, so I don't know where he is. No notice from my peeps. Yep. Nope, still no Nick. Well, he's certainly not Saint Nick, is he? And I was going to go gentle on the young lad. I was going to pick his brain a little bit, see exactly where he's coming from, try to get him to clarify his positions more. I don't know, maybe he's changed some of them, because when we spoke, the one time we really chatted about this, I mean, I kept my claws in, my fangs in. Don't want to scare him off, but I just really challenged him on, you know, his viewpoints about this. Just the thing about invading other countries, you know, to seize their oil and resources. I was rather shocked to hear that. And as I like to patronize when necessary, you know, you hardly hear any black folks or mixed people saying stuff like that. Now, he was raised, I think, in a sort of a Republican and a white background, you know, white neighborhoods, except, you know, this and that. So I thought that there would be an interesting way to proceed from that. And we were going to talk about race and racism. He spent some time in France, too, and he said he experienced some racism. Well, probably because they thought he was Algerian. As I'm sure all of you know, Algeria was a big French colony, which is across France from the Mediterranean, big colony, rather large Muslim country today, and they've had a lot of trouble with fundamentalists. It's sort of a military, I don't know if it's a military dictatorship or regime that's in charge in Algeria. But it's had many problems with very radical, violent fundamentalists who want to impose a Islamic fundamentalist government on the country. So anyway, because of the empire, Britain had, you know, British Empire, French Empire, Spanish Empire, you often have what I call children of the empire migrating to the mother country. And these are people who were not raised or ethnic, you know, French or British or Spanish. In the case of France, you had many Algerians, immigrants who came to France. There's a lot of them in the south of France. There's a lot of them in Paris, darker-skinned people. In fact, when I was in Paris 2 years ago, you know, I love those beautiful mixed-race women. And they had these beautiful French-Algerian mixture women, the beautiful, that brown skin, the beautiful dark hair, shapely, that goddess look. But apart from that, so you have these problems. I think Britain has it too. You get these immigrants. In France's case, you have the Algerians. And what happens? Well, these people get on the dole. You know, France and many European countries have a lavish welfare system, welfare state. So you've got a lot of these immigrants on the welfare system. Many of them never assimilate. They don't learn the language. And they become upset because there's a lack of employment and all these kind of social issues boil over. And then you've got them resented by French people. So I can see where some of this racism comes from. Meanwhile, you know, the French people still want their, I'm sure, their large, lavish welfare state. So, you know, it's a mixture of that. And I'm not down on immigration per se, but I don't believe in, you know, government handouts for immigrants, be it school or medical care. I don't mind immigration, legal immigration. But, you know, if they move to your country illegally and then think they're going to be on the dole and they get free, you know, free health care and free schools, well, this breeds resentment. It bankrupts a country, or it puts a huge strain on its taxes. So anyway, Nick had experienced some of this, and we spoke briefly about that. But you see, I contend, as far as racism, I contend that the biggest racist in the country, the biggest racist in the U.S., believe it or not, you know where I'm going with this? The biggest racist in the U.S. is Barack Obama. Why is that, PK? Because Barack Obama continues to kill dark-skinned people on the other side of the globe. He's doubled George Bush's drone attacks. And when you continue prosecuting these useless wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, it ain't whitey who's getting killed. Yeah, some of the white troops, but it's overwhelmingly 99.999%. It's dark-skinned people on the other side of the world. I'd like to hear somebody refute that logic, because it's true. When you bomb other people, especially with these drones, come out of the sky and boom, they hit these so-called terrorists. Well, they probably killed a lot more innocent civilians and citizens, mistakenly or not, with their, what is the phrase they use? Collateral damage. This just breeds more terrorism and anger towards the U.S. So yes, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, Obama is the number one racist in the country, because he continues to kill brown-skinned people on the other side of the world. Let me have a check of email here. Doesn't answer his calls. Very stereotypical black-like, huh? Or white trash-like. Email from someone. Well, I didn't say it. You said it. But anyway, that was what somebody sent me an email about this. By the way, you can email PK at... My email address is pkbbs2@gmail.com. So I'm going to... complain to Nick about this, because I spoke to him the other day, and today we emailed a couple of emails, so I don't know where he is. I gave him the numbers. I gave him all the information. So sorry, folks. My guest hasn't shown yet. Maybe he'll redeem himself. I don't know. But so far, Nick, I'm disappointed. So back to Obama. This whole war thing. You know, he recently signed the largest military budget ever. I mean, when you look around and you see all the unemployment and the closed stores and people struggling to get by, you know, it just makes you wonder how the politicians and the federal government can keep spending and behaving like they do. In fact, on Saturday, I went to the grocery store, a big chain, and outside of the store was a recruit. I don't know if he was National Guard or active duty, but he was in fatigues, and he was definitely an enlisted man. He had his cap on, his fatigue cap, and he had his, you know, his name tag. And he was handing out small flags, American flags, and asking for a donation for soldiers. And when I walked up, he came up to me and asked me for a donation. I looked him square in the eye and I said, you know, the military budget is bankrupting our nation just as much as the welfare budget. I wonder if I even said welfare budget. No, I said the military budget is bankrupting our nation. And I walked away. And the look on his face was a little bit startled. He didn't have an answer. It was like he couldn't even comprehend it, you know. And he was, I'd say, in his 40s. So a lot of military personnel, by the time they're that age, especially if they're lifers, they sort of know what's going on. In fact, YouTube is full of clips of Iraq veterans against the war. And when you hear them speak and how ashamed they feel of the things that they were asked to do or had to do and the innocent people they admit to killing and the things that, you know, they had to do, it sounds just like when Sean Hannity whines about, well, say our troops are murderers and scaring people in at night, going knocking down their doors at night. Well, if you hear these vets talk, that's exactly what they did or had to do. So, you know, it's just a terrible mess. I was right about opposing it from the get-go. Ron Paul was right about opposing it from the get-go. So I hope Ron Paul takes all the gloves off and really hammers away at the facts and really grows some cojones and stands tall, stands up to his opponents, his Republican opponents, and strongly, confidently, and forcefully puts his principles and ideas across, because he's got nothing to lose. It's his last hurrah. He might as well pull out all the stops and go for it. It's the only way it's going to get done. And just be relentless. Stay on principle. Hone your message a little more clearly and take it from there. I mean, I wish I could coach him. I tried to see if I could coach him in the 08 election a little bit, because there was a few phrases that I would wish he would adapt. And sometimes he does it. I suggested to him when I spoke to him backstage, because my band opened up for him and I got to introduce him, I strongly suggested to him that he say that we should declare victory and leave. He said, well, that's like a, he told me, well, that's like a cliche thing to say. I said, well, I know that, you know that, but it's good talk for the masses to grasp. And then I think I also suggested, and I try to do this a lot, and I suggest you, my valued listeners, do this, is that whenever you're speaking about foreign policy or displeasure with the government and what's going on in our country, it's better that you don't say we did, or look what America did. It's much better and much clearer and much more precise if you say, look what the federal government did. If you always use the term federal government instead of we or America, when you say the federal government, it clearly puts the blame on where it should be. Let me see if I have another email here. What is this one here? My friend says, this fellow who wrote in about my guest not showing up, he said, if you read Thaddeus Russell's book, A Renegade History of the U.S., you'll see that there is historical precedent for his actions. He's just being a renegade, a non-committal renegade. I would guess he won't pay back his college loans either if he has them. So, Nick, I'm disappointed. The fate of the world, part of the fate of the world, hinges on our discussion tonight, and you didn't show up. And I kind of felt that this would happen, so I'm going to really rip you a new one for this. And speaking of the fate of the world, how about that heavy-duty Christian evangelist fella that no one ever heard of? I think he was out in California. The world was supposed to end on Saturday, May 21st, I believe it was. What happened? Well, I see that he has since said he was about 5 months off, and I think he's predicting it now for, I believe it's October. Let's see. Yes, October, folks. So we have till October 21st. Now, I wish he would have said, because he is all-knowing, of course, he probably couldn't change the time that the world's going to end, but I wish he would have said October 31st or November 1st, so that way we could have at least had Halloween. Because as you may or may not know, there are Christians out there. I heard some Christian evangelists on TV years ago saying that they didn't like Halloween. They rather abhorred Halloween because that is the time of the year, the day of the year, when Satan really gets his foot in the door. So, you know, I'd much rather have the end of the world on Halloween. I think that would be much more appropriate. But I always laugh when these people make these predictions. The world's going to end. And I guess some people sold this or that, or they had money involved, or they lost money on this guy's predictions, as if they can sue him. But interesting how these people come up with these theories of when the world's going to end. I don't think it's going to happen in our lifetime. I think it's going to be around for a while. And I think that the radical environmentalists, this ain't going to happen like they claim it's going to happen either. In fact, I heard a good term for the climate change environmentalist crowd: gangrene. Instead of going green, gangrene. These green technologies that Obama's promoting and the government, it's just a way to throw government money, our tax money, at unproven technologies or industries that, you know, they haven't met the test of the market. You know, all this sort of stuff takes money. The government takes our money and puts it into special interest groups thinking that it's going to be profitable and that it's the way to go, the wave of the future. When all that does is distort the market process, you know, no matter what it is, you know, and ethanol is an awful, awful product. It's very wasteful. It's a handout to agribusiness, especially, I believe, Archer Daniel Midlands and probably Monsanto. So, you know, in a free market, we would get rid of all this and let private entrepreneurs and inventors and investors come up with alternative energy solutions without this huge government national planning and all this. I mean, it's been a disaster in Spain. They've lost, I guess, thousands of jobs for every job, green job they've created. I don't know what the numbers are, but it's just so appalling, the waste involved. And, of course, certain big businesses get on the bandwagon to support climate change and anything that comes from it. So I think I've mentioned this before, which certainly bears mentioning again, is that whenever big business and big government are on the same page about something that they want to fund and promote, hang on to your wallet, folks. You know, because the corporate state marches ahead and they want to use your money on programs that they normally wouldn't use it for. Let's see if I have another email here. In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. I'm not exactly sure what that means. But, that was in response to an email from a friend about this guest I was supposed to have on tonight. We'll see how he fares with me. So, I don't know where this guy is. Perhaps he's studying, but, you know, Nick, I'm very disappointed with you, and I'm probably not going to invite you back unless you come on and apologize to my millions of fans as to why you had the audacity not to show up after you said that you would, because I take people at their word. And I guess I'm even old-fashioned because in my world and the way I do business is that my handshake is my bond. I don't need a contract for the most part. My handshake is my bond. If I say that I'm going to be here at a certain time, or I'm going to do this, or I will pay you this, da-da-da-da-da, I do it. And if there's a problem, I will let you know. So, you know, I'm real big on, my libertarian senses are big on personal responsibility and, you know, keeping your word and integrity. That's a word I like, integrity. I have integrity. BBSRadio.com has integrity. Ron Paul has integrity. And is also, I'm fond of saying, I'm a drummer also. And any musician will agree with me that good drummers are consistent. Therefore, Ron Paul would make a great drummer. You talk about consistent. This man's voting record speaks for itself. I love the fact that it's been in Congress. He's known as Dr. No because he votes no on so many things that he doesn't find listed in the Constitution. Enumerated in the Constitution. More power to him. But I love it when it's 434 to 1. So many times it's been like that. I myself would have, just because I know myself and how I feel about things, I would have no trouble doing that or speaking truth to power. Because I have absolutely no desire to gain power, political power, or to walk on other people to go to get higher up. And I also feel this way about music. I don't have a useless musician's or singer's ego, as many of them do. My ego is about the finished product. If the band sounds good, then I'm doing my job, and everything is right in terms of that. I'll boast about, hey, man, the band was great. Our band sounds better than that band. I'll do it like that. But I've always been this way. I'm consistent. I like to showcase other talent or young talent. I'm not jealous of, you know, young musicians who play in my band or get a lot of applause or singers, good for them because it makes me look good. In fact, it fuels my ego, but my ego is not about PK some great flashy drummer. That's not how I play. That's not who I am as a drummer. I play a supporting role. So I'm sure that back to Dr. Paul, I feel like I could easily be one of those people who would vote no where everybody else voted yes. Because in the long run, look what it does for your integrity. Look what it does. Look how it looks on your voting record. It shows that you were consistent, that you couldn't be bought, and that you never sold out. And I myself have never sold out either, especially not musically. I like to play the kind of music I want to play, which is mostly rhythm and blues. Yeah, I'll play other stuff in between disco and, you know, certain songs I might not care to play, especially for dance music and the type of gigs I've done. But as far as politically and in terms of economics, I just can't be bought. It's not even an issue, you know? Okay, here's another email about my guest who didn't show up. Hey, Nick, if you're out there, listen to this one. He said, he's asleep after all that Obama worshiping and genuflecting. Or maybe he's out drinking and dancing while hitting on the sisters. Well, I don't know if he's hitting on the sisters because he says he has a white girlfriend. Not that I care, but that was another of his characteristics. So, anyway, back to, where was I going to go with this? The Middle East. Back to the Middle East. I couldn't even think of them. And I know a lot of people think this way because I've heard comments like this, that we should just, depending on the country, nuke them and take their oil. Or, you know, bomb them and take their oil. And to hear that from an American, where does that mentality come from? And if these people are Christians, that's even more laughable. But here's the problem with a lot of modern day Christians in the U.S. You don't see this in Europe because Europe doesn't have evangelicals, as far as I know, or very few, and there's no Bible Belt. But in the U.S., you have the rise of Christian Zionists. They've been infiltrated by the Israeli lobby. I don't know if they get money from powerful Jewish groups or AIPAC, but you've especially John Hagee, Pat Robertson, the late, not great Jerry Falwell. They implore their flocks that, folks, we got to support Israel because God, this is God's way. You know, we've got to support Israel. So it's led to the rise of Christian Zionism. And these people don't even question what's going on. They don't realize that the Jews in Israel today, most of them have nothing to do with the Jews of the Bible, nor are they related to the Bible, nor are they even Semites or Semitic. The real Semites are the Arabs. I'm pretty sure that the Semitic Jews of the past looked more like today's Arabs. Also, I think that they were probably a darker-skinned people and more similar-looking to the Arabs of today. But what you have in Israel today is a legacy of Eastern European and Russian Jews who are white, non-Semitic Jews who descended upon Palestine after the war especially and claimed it as their own. Yet the funny thing and the hypocritical thing, the thing that really gets me is that, and I've mentioned this before, but it's still relevant. It's good. I just hope it will sink in, is that Israel was founded by white European and Russian atheist Zionist Jews. And here's the ultimate hypocrisy, you know, who then shouted, God gave us this land, shouted the atheist Zionist Jews. Well, I mean, I myself am an atheist. I'm a non-militant atheist. So that gives me some cred because I know that a lot of Jewish people, probably the majority of Jewish people and or Zionists, probably the majority are purely secular and or agnostic and or atheistic, and they practice their religion as a tradition. So since Israel was initially founded by atheist white Jews, how can you say, if you're an atheist, you don't believe in God, how can you then say that God gave you the land? You know, it just does not make sense. Yet in our country, Jewish lawyers and attorneys, they're, you know, notorious for fighting against for separation of church and state and keeping religion out of the schools. So I see a supreme irony, a hypocrisy in Israel where they want to claim that some sacred book gave them the right to take this land. I personally think I've heard it referred to, you know, the Bibles as a Hebrew fairy tale. You know, so if I think it's a Hebrew fairy tale, I also think that ancient Jewish writers in the Bible enshrined themselves as the chosen people and created this whole myth, and it's bred resentment ever since. Now, a lot of countries, or most countries, let's say all countries of the world have wealthy people. Maybe not a lot of them, but there are wealthy and or rich people in every country. But they weren't all kicked out or evicted from their countries. And as I understand it, and I saw a list of the dates, like 1290, 1165, Jews were kicked out of practically every European country. And, you know, I've been curious as to why this is, and I just try to explore it on my own, objectively. You know, I don't have an axe to grind. I don't have any hate, although, again, you know, free inquiry on this topic is often treated like you're a hater or this and that, which to me is just ridiculous. But as I've searched this on my own, I wondered why, you know, Jews were kicked out or evicted from so many European countries in the past. And I think a lot of it comes back to this book called the Talmud, which is very anti-Gentile. It's very hateful. It's very anti-Jesus. And it condones, as far as I understand it, some of the passages I've seen, pedophilia, murder, Jewish supremacism. So I think these are the things that in the behavior that's or condoning dishonesty or deceitfulness by a legacy of these type of rabbis or Pharisees that Jesus supposedly fought with or debated with is a legacy of that, as I understand it. And once again, you'll notice that I'm not advocating hatred against anybody or anybody losing their rights. It's my honest way of trying to interpret it as I find it to be at this point in my life. And I've been researching this now for about 8 years and studying it a lot. While others were, you know, studying and demonizing Islam, I was studying the tribe. I was studying not Judaism per se, but, you know, the history of it. Why, and Zionism, why there's this dislike for Jews or Zionism, what does this stem from? And this is what I see it coming from. I'm not talking about stereotypical criticisms or comments about Jews, like they're cheap or this blood libel stuff. I don't, you know, that's not where I'm going with this. This is deeper, this is historical, and if you... I've heard the term and understand the term institutionalized racism. Well, I think the Talmud is really institutionalized racism in writing. There's some awful things in there. I was shocked at some of the things I've read, the quotes from there, and they weren't taken out of context. In fact, that great religious revolutionary, Martin Luther, who spoke Hebrew back in the 16th century, he was... When he first peered into the Talmud, he was shocked at what he read. So I stand with the anti-Zionists. I stand especially with Jews united against Zionism, the Israeli peace movement, and Israeli human rights groups. So if that makes me a hater, so be it. I also am a big fan of a former Israeli. He's a very avowed atheist now, but he's a British subject. His name is Gilad Atzmon, A-T-Z-M-O-N, G-I-L-A-D, I believe it is, Gilad Atzmon. He's also a heavy jazz sax player, but he's got great essays and debates about Israel, about Jewish power, about Zionism, about what's happening to the Palestinians. So I stand with the anti-Zionist Jews. This is a very brave, heroic bunch of people, and they're constantly referred to as self-hating Jews and even anti-Semitic. I'm a big fan of Norman Finkelstein, who wrote The Holocaust Industry, who has debated this clown Dershowitz and the like. In fact, Norman Finkelstein is a American, he's a college professor, writer, as is Noam Chomsky. And both of those two Jewish gentlemen are not allowed into Israel. I think Norman Finkelstein's been banned for 10 years because they like to meet and talk and help and socialize with Palestinians. So they're not allowed in that great democracy of Israel. Meanwhile, there's another very brave, well, he's actually formerly Jewish. He became a Christian, which is, as I understand it, one of the worst things a Jew can do. Mordecai Vanunu. I believe in the mid-1980s, he was like the Julian Assange of WikiLeaks in his day. He published or turned over some documents proving and showing Israel's nuclear weapons program that they've been in denial about for so long. You know, Israel won't allow any inspections of their nuclear facilities, any international inspections. And Mordecai Vanunu was... So he was in Italy at the time. He was caught and drugged by Mossad and taken back to Israel, where he spent 18 years in prison. I don't know if it was solitary confinement, but spent 18 years in prison. Then he was let out, and now I think he's under house arrest again, I think because he was speaking to the press. So Mordecai Vanunu is another brave anti-Zionist former Jew because he became a Christian. Another really important the late, great Benjamin Friedman, he also became a Christian. But he's got a very important, I believe it was a 19 or 1961 speech. You can hear it on YouTube. Benjamin Friedman, I believe it's F-R-E-E-D-M-A-N. He really explains what the Zionists did prior to and during World War I, how Israel was set up. Israel was not set up as a result of the Holocaust. Israel was set up during World War I in 1917 with the Balfour Declaration, which Britain guaranteed the Zionists a homeland in the Middle East. And there was no major persecution of Jews in Europe at that time. Yes, there was pogroms in Russia. There's some of that going on. But there were some other reasons for that too, which Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote about. So I was trying to, you know, investigate the causes of a lot of this anti-Semitism. And my research didn't take me to stereotypical reasons. In fact, there was a movie a couple years ago. I went to see it at one of those artsy-fartsy theaters. I think it was called In Search of Anti-Semitism or something like that about anti-Semitism today. And, of course, it was a Jewish producer that did this. But he didn't go where I would go with it. He sort of stayed on the fringe of things and, you know, interviewed some young black folks in New York and this and that, or talked about his boyhood growing up. But it wasn't where I would have gone, and he didn't ask the questions I would have asked, which I would have liked to find out about. In fact, one of the worst examples of a Zionist kook is Alan Dershowitz. And Alan Dershowitz lobbied, it's a shame what he was able to pull off. Alan Dershowitz was able to prohibit Norman Finkelstein from receiving tenure at DePaul University in Chicago. So talk about crushing free speech, because he doesn't like Norman Finkelstein because he wrote the Holocaust industry and different books that criticize Zionism and an Israeli policy. In fact, you can see him debate on YouTube. Was it on Amy Goodman's station? I forget. Democracy Now! But it's hilarious to see Norman Finkelstein debating Alan Dershowitz, because Dershowitz is pretty clueless. He's not nearly the scholar. You know, he's a lawyer and he's a crazed Zionist. But if you get to see that debate, you know, it's pretty enlightening. So anyway, as I wind down here, once again, I'm sorry my guest didn't show up, but I'm really not surprised. I kind of thought this would happen. So, you know, I've lost respect for this guy, and I'm going to let him have it next time I see him. Way to go, Nick. But there you have it. So I have an interesting guest next week. We're going to talk about probably the Middle East again. Anyway, I think I did a pretty good job ad-libbing tonight. I know I jump around, but I can, and a lot of things are relevant. You have to have an overview of society and the economy, as I do, because I have a free market economics background, which gives me a sort of an edge on the way I perceive things. So anyway, keep supporting Ron Paul, everybody. Learn about Ron Paul. See what he's about. And until next week, I'll see you again next week. This is your host, PK, signing off. I'll see you next week, same time, same place. Again, we're here at Third Stream View is my program, my show here at bbsradio.com every Monday evening at 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Central, and 12 a.m. Eastern. So until next week, everybody, PK over and out.